What is up, everybody? RLTK Podcast. Jordan here, chilling with my boy Chris. Chris, what is going on?
What's up, man?
How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. You know, my Mavericks won, man.
Hey, them Mavs.
Kind of exciting.
Hey, them Mavs, though, saying, they looking like...
Looking solid.
They looking like a problem. But here's the problem, though. They in the... they in, like, the playing spots. And there's some juggernauts in the playing spots. You got the Nuggets. You got the Golden State Warriors. You got the Lakers, you got the Mavs, and then I can't remember who else there is, but
I mean, as long as we're not the Pistons, I'm okay.
Damn, them boys is garbage, boo boo. Well, anyways, like we said last podcast, we're gonna start jumping into having some guests,
so
we're super excited about it. We know that there are youth workers, youth leaders, youth pastors all over the country, all over the world doing incredible work. And a lot of them are our friends. And so we want to just start interviewing them, hearing about what they're doing, learning from them, hearing about their challenges and their successes. And hopefully what that'll be is a benefit to you. You'll get nuggets. It'll help you, your context, to help you engage your people in new ways, to help them understand, love, and grow in Jesus. So introducing our first guest. My boy Thomas. Thomas, what's good, bro?
What's good? What's good?
How you living?
Man, I can't complain, man. Living life and doing the work that I'm supposed to be doing.
That's dope, bro. All right, bro. Well, tell us. Well, first of all, since we were on the topic of the NBA, who's your team, bro?
I'm almost embarrassed to say this. I'm a Chicago Bulls fan.
That's unfortunate. You
know, I know.
You in purgatory right now, my boy.
Dang.
Yeah, I probably won't be able to celebrate playoffs for another 5 to 7 years right now.
Hey, you got some pieces though. Kobe White, he's nice. Kobe White, he nice.
And then you saw how he looked to the side. He Google searched. He could find nobody.
No, DeMar DeRozan is nice too, bro. I mean, Caruso.
He might not even be there next year, though.
Oh, for real?
He's a free agent. He's a free agent, so we'll see. Uh-oh. We'll see.
Well, bro, you better be praying. You better be praying and fasting, bro, because if not,
I'm going to be watching old Michael Jordan highlights for the next couple of years.
Hey, you seen that meme with Wolverine, bro, when he's rubbing the photo?
Yeah.
That's gonna be you, bro. That's going to be you with a picture of Michael Jordan, bro. You know what I'm saying? Laying on your bed. just crying. Got a tissue. That's hilarious, bro.
Indeed.
But anyways, yeah, bro, appreciate you being on the pod. Grateful to have you here. Obviously, our listeners don't know you. I do. Chris is meeting you for the first time. Tell us about you, man. Who are you? Where are you from? Like, what do you do? And, like, how did you even get to the place where you're doing that stuff?
Absolutely. Thomas Brackeen. I'm from the D.C. metro area, which we affectionately call the DMV, which is inclusive of Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia, and Maryland. I actually live in Maryland. My job is in Virginia. My church is in D.C. So I encompass the whole DMV in a sense. So for me, as far as who I am, I have coined this new term. I'm not going to say that I made it up, but I'm a multi-vocational minister here in the D.C. area. Serve at the historic Metropolitan AME Church in downtown Washington, D.C. Church is 186 years old. Lots of just ancestral history here in the city. I do diversity, equity, and inclusion work full time. And I have the privilege to just do a lot of work with some major national youth ministry organizations, namely Urban Youth Workers Institute, DeVuli, National Network of Youth Ministries. So I'm passionate about all things young people. Been in ministry since 2002. Been working with kids since the age of 15. And
got You got to throw it in, huh?
Yeah, I just knew from as a teenager, I knew I was going to be working with kids in some capacity. I knew that's what I wanted to do. I didn't know it was going to be in an aspect of ministry, but I always knew that I wanted to work with young people because, you know, part of my personal story. But I just knew that I wanted to pour into other people as I've had people pour into me.
Nope. Yeah. And I was just, as you said it, I was thinking about it because I know that, like, obviously you're at Historic Black Church, which is dope. I want a little bit more context on that for sure. But also I'm thinking about, you know, in the Black church specifically, or just in, like, churches in the more urban context, oftentimes, like, you get saved and then Cass is like, hey, bro, you're going to be a pastor, like, off rip. Like, oh, hey, you young? You're a Christian, bet. Youth ministry, bro. You're called, brother. You get voluntold, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Your first sermon is next
Black church.
Bro, hey, let them know.
That's the truth.
But yeah, so tell us a little bit more about the church that you're at and the historicity surrounding it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I've been there for almost about 7 years now, but just again, our church is considered the cathedral of African Methodism, and you know, not sure how much history you know about the AME Church, but Metropolitan AME was specifically positioned to be in a place where we are in downtown DC. We're about 4 to 5 blocks from the White House. And so it was specifically positioned there just as a place to push against the systems, against our people. And Metropolitan AME just holds a lot of historical history. Frederick Douglass preached in Metropolitan AME Church. Rosa Parks' funeral was held at Metropolitan AME Church. Obama attended several times during his presidential, term. As not just, that ancestral history that is associated with Metropolitan, but also there's just history living and breathing in the church. I mean, we have a member of our church who was a part of the Little Rock Nine. We have a member of our church, Dorothy Gilliam. She was the first African-American woman reporter at the Washington Post. I can go down names and names of persons who hold some type of historical significance in the Black community that, either have gone to be with the ancestors or are still living, breathing members of our congregation. So it's definitely known to be a beacon in the community here in the DC area.
That's dope, bro. What is it like serving in like a church that has such a rich history?
I'm gonna be honest with you. I was intimidated before I even got to position. The funny thing about it, I was teaching at a Christian education workshop one January some years ago, and some members of Metropolitan were there. I was teaching a class about youth ministry, young adult ministry, how to do more effective youth ministry and young adult ministry. I get an email a week later from some of the persons that were in my class, and they're like, would you like to come be our youth pastor? And I'm like, off the one workshop? Like, really? But it was an honor as well, because I felt like it was just a representative of the great work that I was doing. But I didn't really know much about Metropolitan until I then, as I was going through the interview process, and I went to go attend the service, and I went to do more research and started to talk with some of my peers from the AME church. And I was just like, I don't think I deserve to be here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm qualified to be here. And, I literally tried not to take the job, even when they offered it to me after I went through the interview process. And okay. I was just like, I don't think I'm good enough. But, you know, but now that I'm there, I think it's one of the best decisions of my life. It totally helped to transform my theology. It allowed me to just see things from a different perspective. Being in a church that is active in the community, is a very proud of Black liberation theology, and just not a church that's just having service just to have people shout and run around the church, but actually allowing the scriptures to come to life through the work that we do in the community. You'll find so many different things that we're doing, and allowing persons to be connected in our church to be able to do outreach and do justice work, not just in the DC area, but we have persons that are connected to organizations that are doing justice work all across this world. So I'm just honored and proud to be in that space, and just thankful that God allowed me to, even when I thought I wasn't good enough, that God knew I was good enough to be in a space, despite what man or even myself thought at the moment.
That's interesting. That brings a lot of excitement to me, because one of the things that growing up in the Black church and growing up in all the things that you said that Black people do, it's it almost seems very tough to reach our community sometimes. And like, what do you see when you're out there doing the work? What do you see some of the main struggles in the Black community when it comes to the church?
That's a good question.
I think the number one struggle is that we want young people to come to us without positioning ourselves to go to them. And I think it's one of the biggest downfalls of the Black church as it pertains to doing urban youth ministry, because young people are relational. And I think there was a point in time that, you know, the Black church in the 90s and maybe even the early 2000s got away with just doing programs. And if I put together a great program, then they'll come. And even as I say that, I'm a product of that, you know, even being a part of a program or even in earlier on in my youth ministry days in the early to mid 2000s, putting together great programs and having a packed house. Now, after you put together that program, what is it that you want to do to maintain and cultivate and nurture those relationships that they are coming back? How are you then continue to reach out to them and have conversation and being relational, so that, you know, you are being a part of their faith formation, that they want to grow and ask more questions about Christ, or even giving them permission to have theological discourse? Because a lot of times, you know, we want them to come to church and believe what we say out our mouths, believe this, believe that. But how can we provide environments for young people to be okay with them questioning scripture, or be okay with them, you know, I have an issue with that, can we talk about this a little bit more? And not having the pressure to have the right answer to give them at that moment, or, you know, dismiss them. But hey, let's go on a journey together and let's explore the imagination of the scripture together. We may not come out with a solid answer, but let's go on this journey together. And then oftentimes the Black church, because we don't do that, we get mad when we hear them say, oh, you know, I don't want to be a part of the church, or I'm, you know, I'm spiritual, not religious, or, you know, I'm a part of the Hebrew Israelites, or I'm Muslim, you know, and then we get frustrated because they're going and turning to other places. But the problem is we have based largely our ministry on just the programs we tried to create, and our programs are not going to be sustainable long term.
That's so good. So good, bro. I love what you said about the imagination of scripture. And I think, like, I mean, yes, I mean, obviously, this is what we do with Real Talk, Reframe, all that stuff. But this idea of, going on the journey with them and inviting them into continued conversations where they're learning and growing and understanding. It's like dynamic. And I think what we miss sometimes is that there's as much in it for us as there is for them. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
As a pastor or as a leader, I haven't arrived. Like, God is still actively working, shaping, forming me. And so those conversations with those young people, as much as God may be using me to make clear who Jesus is, he's also using them to make clearer to me who Jesus is. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. And so I think like a lot of times we miss that. And then it's like, well, you know, I got to get these kids to think about this topic or this issue the same way I do. And if I don't, I think ultimately we feel like it poorly reflects on us and it says something about our character or our ability to do our job. And so I think that's why we like try and force the issue with them instead of recognizing like the need for them to have their own relationship with God and for us to like, we need to create a framework for them to like explore in and discover what they need to discover and ultimately trust God, the Holy Spirit, to like speak to them, shape them, direct them, guide them, encourage them. And I think that's what this generation needs, man. I think it could be like, it will be incredibly transformative. And I think in some spaces and places, we're already seeing that. We're already seeing them having really cool expressions of faith and then going out and like doing the work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's good.
I like that because I think to a degree, scripture does demand imagination.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Because it demands faith.
Yes.
Right. And so I think sometimes when we're in the context of the church, we can, by trying to make them think how we think, we can taint the young imagination, the young mind to imagine what you know, was it like to really have faith in Christ? You know what I'm saying? Especially when you have hard times and you have hard struggles, you know, we're going through all the political problems, our identity crisis, you know, all the small little battles we have in communities, you know, to a large degree, what does it attack the most? It attacks the imagination. Yeah. And then your mind just goes into the most darkest places because that's where we end up believing these things. And so it's like, to a degree, we have to leave room for the scriptures to nurture that imagination, you know, so it can bring out that faith that Hebrews talked about, yeah. You know? And so I think that's a conversation that we need to be having too in the church, you know, the beauty of imagination. That God has really given us this thing to picture him, you know, to see him without seeing, you know, because at the end of the day, it calls us to have faith. And, you know, I know it's a little bit further, it's a little rabbit hole, but it's interesting how faith works because faith to a degree feeds off
imagination. Yeah, you need to be able to imagine it to believe in it. Yeah, like you need to be able to conceptualize it, mm-hmm. in order for it to like actually be something that you can believe is true.
Yeah.
And if you can't conceptualize it, then you can't necessarily believe that it's true. Yeah. I mean, and obviously revelation trumps all things, right? Yes. So if God just drops a bomb on you, then it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? But if that doesn't happen, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I think about this, like if the framework for young people to understand reality is fundamentally different from the framework that we have, right? It just is.
Yeah.
Like technology, social media, all of those things have massively changed the way that they view the world, reality, the things that they assume, the ways that they live, move, and breathe. Then if we try and enforce our like way of thinking on them,
mm-hmm.
like they don't have the same framework. So by nature, then it's just not going to fit.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think we're probably running into some of that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good, man. That's really good, bro.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say? I know that you kind of hinted to this, but like what would you say are some of the most difficult challenges, or are there other difficult challenges that you're experiencing with young people in your area specifically? I know you just mentioned kind of you know, not journeying with them and different things of that nature, but are there some other things that you're experiencing that you think are important to engage with as it pertains to men's ministry?
Yeah, well, I think there's varying layers and issues. I think one thing that we encounter right now, and I would even, you know, for some it might be an issue, but I also see it as an opportunity as well. I think in my context at my church and a lot of other churches here in the DC area, many of us have some high performing kids who are participating in so many different things within their life, you know, where being a church in a downtown metropolis like DC, many of our families live 30 to 45 minutes away from the church. Sometimes in some cases an hour. And so, you know, we have to be very flexible and very creative in the programming that we do. And also being mindful not to over program or over plan things to make sure, because some of these kids are playing a sport or playing multiple sports. They're playing an instrument. Some of our kids are doing some high functioning things, you know, participating in other after school activities. I just had a student that, you know, just came back from a trip from South Africa, you know, being able to participate through a school. So there's one aspect of trying to reimagine what youth ministry looks like, you know, post-pandemic, as people have gotten back into a sense of normalcy. I don't want to say things are back to normal, but a sense of normalcy. And so it's kind of trying to build around that. But also at the same time, because there's so many multiple demographics of young people within the DC metropolitan area, and a lot of it has to do with the socioeconomic positioning of where people are in the city or in Virginia or Maryland. You know, it's young people maybe not even having the access or opportunities to be a part of a faith community, or it's, you know, we're in a place right now in the DC metro area, we're being plagued by youth violence, carjackings are at a long time high here in the DC area. I think I saw a statistic recently that says that carjackings have increased by 300 or 400% over the last 10 years this year.
Wow.
And so I think a lot of issues where most major cities deal with, you know, just, you know, violence, socioeconomic, you know, issues, lack of resources, you know, lack of opportunities and low opportunity communities. So I think, you know, depending on where you sit as a youth minister or youth leader in this area, you're kind of dealing with different issues. For some, if you are kind of more of a fluent Black community, the issues look a little bit different from somebody who's doing ministry in the hood. But I think we're all fighting and struggling. Regardless if, you know, you're more affluent Black church or if you're in a hood, we all struggling trying to engage young people. But I think it goes back to that remodeling of youth ministry. How are we going to do things differently to reach this audience? Are we going to step outside the four walls and not continue to expect them to come to us, but actually position ourselves in the places where they're at and be present and available where these young people have an opportunity to gain our trust, gain our confidence, even if it looks a little bit messy, even we have to endure, you know, some of these kids turning us away and turning us down, but they want to see that we're seen, that, you know, we're consistent.
I think about, yeah, I mean, obviously you're in DC, so, or doing ministry in DC or in the DMV area. And so there's just so many, there's so much diversity, right? Socioeconomically, culturally, like all of those different types of things, like in different pockets, in different areas of whichever city we're in. And so how are you bringing those people together? Is it possible? But then also, is it possible to also bring those church leaders together? Because obviously you're in the Black mm-hmm. church, right? But there, obviously, there's suburban churches that are probably more, you know what I'm saying, white. You've got, you know, I'm sure you've got churches that are like heavy Latino And then because you're in the DMV area, you probably got, you know, Asian church, all those different types of things, like all those different types of demographics everywhere, right? Like, and we don't see it a bunch in Phoenix, but every time I go out to California, I'm like, yo, there is, like this is diversity, you know what I'm saying? And so, so yeah, like, how are you able to bring those to different people groups together? Is that like incredibly challenging? And then also, what about bringing leaders together?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in that aspect, I think it is challenging, but I think it's all about approach. I think, like right now, I help to facilitate and run a network, what we call the DMV network. Our network is mostly made up of, you know, bivocational youth ministers, mostly Black youth ministers. But they, you know, a lot of them who are a part of this particular network, they're in this network of where they're positioned in a city. A lot of us are doing ministry in D.C. and live in Maryland, or vice versa, you know, live in D.C., doing ministry in Maryland. And so it's easier for those folks to come together, and demographically, we are having some of the same issues. Now, it would be harder for those, for some of my counterparts who may live a little bit up north in Baltimore, because they're 45 minutes away. But, you know, I feel like there's some good energy for persons of Baltimore who connect together because there's a different dynamic in their city. They may not come to our network, but there's an opportunity for resource sharing, but also being able to connect, understanding there's different issues in that area. There's also a Northern Virginia network, which is more diverse, mostly made up of multicultural churches, a lot of Presbyterian churches. I would even say that network is a lot more affluent. The Northern Virginia area represents some of the richest counties in the country, you know, Arlington County, Prince William County, Loudoun County. So the makeup of their churches are a lot different. And I, you know, into what your question is saying, like a lot of maybe their concerns are a lot different than us who may be dealing with kids in the hood. They're maybe more focused on, you know, we need to come up with more creative games in our ministry. Whereas, you know, we're dealing more so with trauma with some of our kids because somebody just got shot last week. And so that where it may bring difficulty in the differences of, you know, where we're what we're dealing with in our context. But I think it's important. Where maybe 10 years ago when I was in this whole trying to bring people together thing, I wanted everybody to come together. But I think there's value in allowing persons in these different segmented areas. We may not always come together as a big group, but it's okay if you have your small network here and your small network over there, and continue to do outreach in the spaces that you are. And then just trying to find ways to come together when it's possible. But understanding, even when we do come together, that we all come from different denominations. We all come from different upbringings. We also come from different theologies. But allowing persons to understand that we're not coming together to debate, you know, what we believe, but we all have one thing in common, and that's young people.
Yeah, I think. It's very difficult to reach when you try to do ministry in the hood, or when you try to go and tell people about the gospel in the hood. Sometimes it's difficult because a lot of them are angry and frustrated. A lot will receive from you, but every once in a while you'll run into that one where it's, I really don't want to hear anything you have to say. This ain't church right now. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, that it's, I always say that the poor is in a better position than the rich because they have the potential to know what's actually intrinsically valuable in life because they're not, because they don't have all the possessions of things, right? And I think there's something about not having everything that helps you to see things a little bit better. I don't know. Does that make sense? Like, it's,
yeah. In some cases, you have no choice but to depend on God.
Yeah, that's like, it's something about not having everything that helps you to see the truth of things. And I think when it comes to reaching the people in those communities, I think they can actually see the truth of the gospel. You know, I think they could see it way more than anyone else that has everything of the world, all the possessions of the world. It's like, people in those positions, I perceive that they don't really need to really understand what you're trying to say. Because, I mean, what else can they really say that they need? You know, it's something about possession that blocks the mind and blocks people from understanding the access of Christ, you know, or the necessariness of Christ. You know, it's just like when the young rich ruler, you know, when he said, give up everything, the man, he couldn't do it. He walked away with shame. And I think that there's a reason why Christ reached out to the low of heart, you know, the humble spirits, the poor, the forgotten. His love reached them in a way that no one else could do. And I think that points to something. But I'm dealing with the reality that when you try to go to these places, you're going to deal with a lot of trauma and anger. You know, I think that's why love has to be the universal truth when it comes to trying to reach people. And do you see the same thing when you go doing ministry in these areas?
Yeah, to your point, one of the greatest parts, and I would feel like is the greatest aspect of my youth ministry. I've been coaching basketball since I was 15 years old. I'm 43, it'll be 44 in a few months. So for most of my life, I believe that's the greatest aspect of what I would call youth ministry, because a lot of the kids that may not necessarily come to my church, but come to me through an aspect of basketball. A lot of those kids are the ones where their friends have been shot, going through different family situations, going through different types of trauma. I can't tell you how many teams that I've actually had, the majority of the team had both parents show up for the game, or even both parents in their life, you know. Most of my Saturdays were, you know, piling young black men into my car to get them, you know, leaving my house 3 hours before the game to make sure I'm picking up these young men, because they're going through. And then sometimes having to drive into the hood to go pick up these kids, you know, and understanding that, you know, there's this black man coming to pick up these young black men in the hood. We don't know this dude. They come in our space. Yep. But there was also an aspect, as, you know, people seeing me, it was also safe at the same time, because they knew where these youngins were going. They knew they was going to a safe spot. And so the reality is, sometimes some of these kids used to come to practice, same ones I picked up, cuss me out. I've had a couple threaten to kill me. I've had a couple want to fight me in practice. And, you know, we would deal with those situations, but I couldn't take it personal, because they were just things that they're going through that, you know, when I get them for that hour and a half, now I might be upset at the way that they came at me, but I never closed the door for them. You know, I'll correct them, but I'll see you at practice next week. And no matter what the altercation was, no matter how they came at me, most of these kids came back, you know, week after week, and they would come back and apologize. And you just get to know that, you know, you got to see beyond the pain. You got to see beyond the hurt. And that's largely sometimes what the Black church has to struggle with, because it's discomfort when we're going in, because we want to go in, say our speech or about the word, we want to preach to them, but it's uncomfortable to sit with them with their pain. And that's what I meant by going on a journey with them. Even when I talked to them earlier in the conversation, you got to be willing to sit in the discomfort and the pain and the trauma that they're going through. And like we said, Jordan, at the end of the day, it's that love that conquers all. And when they see that you truly value them and that they are not just another number, they're just not another person that's giving tithes to the ministry or, you know, stacking your roster in the church, and that they see that you actually value them, and not just going into their community and setting up a community day once a year, and you don't come back for another year till you're ready to do another community day to check the box, but constantly showing up, constantly being there, constantly listening, and not coming with your own agenda. Don't come because you're trying to just preach the gospel, and that's fine. I'm not saying that you shouldn't go to communities and preach the gospel, but when are we just going to show up and listen to the pain and the trauma, and not just leave that experience and say, well, you all need to pray about it? No, listening to be able to come back to your church or your congregation and say, hey, these are the needs of this community. These are the needs of the young people. We're not just going to go preach and do this, but how can we now serve them in the midst of their trauma?
Yeah, bro. Yeah, I think that kind of gets into, a lots of conversation. I think the narcissism and the idea that, you know, we don't need to address the physical needs of people, but there just needs to be this mental ascent, this spiritual ascent to the gospel, and then physical condition doesn't matter. When actually I think the gospel talks about God reconciling the world to himself in Christ, and there's been a fracturedness to existence of spirituality and the physical and the emotional, and all those things have been fractured by sin, and God is bringing those things back together in himself. And we see that the Bible culminates in the new heavens and the new earth here, right? Like, we're not going to some other place. We're going to be here, right? And God's going to restore all things, and we'll dwell with him forever. And so when I think about that, and I break that down into the here and now, like, if that's the case, then that does mean we go to people, we preach the gospel and all those different types of things, but we also care for what's going on in their lives. We care about the trauma that's fractured them psychologically and emotionally. We care about the fact that their stomachs are empty. We care about, you know, the fact that they don't have guidance because their parents aren't around, or their parents are so busy working that they're never with them. You know what I mean? Yeah. We care about those issues, and we do our best to address them. And in doing so, we bring the kingdom, right? We bring heaven to earth.
Yeah.
We bring the kingdom to their neighborhood, and we're doing the work of Jesus, right? Because Jesus, what did he do? Step down off his throne and become a man. You know what I'm saying? And entered into existence. And God, I think Jesus in his example doesn't just enter into existence as a fully grown man, right? He doesn't just come, oh, let me die on the cross real quick and bounce. You know what I'm saying? Comes as a baby, is vulnerable, is a refugee, has to be raised and nurtured, learns and grows, and, you know, cares for and loves people. Then, you know, steps into his ministry and ultimately is killed, you know, at the hands of the people that he comes to save. But I think it's very intentional the way God went about living his life on earth. And that is our example. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, bro.
Yeah.
It's so good. I agree with you.
What are some of the topics that you run into with the young people? Or what are some of the things that you find yourself having tough conversations with them about?
That's good.
Often it's about identity. I think they're really trying to discover who they are in this present world. And a lot of times I think when we bring up the word identity, I think often we immediately go to their sexual identity. And I think that's a piece of it. But I think it's just identity, period. Because, I mean, there's so many aspects where we often ask the question, like, or we even kind of jokingly say, how these all these kids that's growing up in these $700,000 houses out here talking about they live the street life when they living in two parent homes, you know. But often it goes back to identity, you know. They want to live an identity that is perceived to be accepted in a certain way as it pertains to street life or street culture, or, you know, they'd rather be identified as being a part of the hood rather than, you know, coming up in a spiritual home upbringing. So I think identity is largely a thing, and even it's not necessarily persons who are even trying to find identity in that way. I think, you know, largely with this, you know, social media generation, you know, we have youngins that are going to IG and Reddit and TikTok and, you know, creating these identities that are not necessarily themselves because they want to be accepted by people. So I think there's an aspect, there's identity, there's acceptance. You know, I want to be accepted by a certain group. I want to be accepted by and have followers. I want people to follow me because I see this person has 100,000 followers. I want to be able to, you know, get that same type of affirmation and attention. So I think identity is big in so many aspects that I think that's where a lot of these youngins are struggling with. And they often turn to, you know, the negative opportunities. And not to say that social media is bad or TikTok is bad, but it's, you know, really helping them to shape who they are, and most importantly in the Black church, who they are in Christ. I want to say this one last thing, because although I have highlighted a lot of, you know, kind of the concerns of the Black church, I'm a firm believer of the Black church. I don't want to get canceled and say, I don't want nobody to say after this podcast, I said the Black church was whack. I just want to set the record straight, you know.
But respect.
You know, I am firmly planted in the Black church. I firmly love the Black church. I firmly love what we have to offer. I firmly love that, you know, we teach our ancestral roots. And I think we have to leverage that in order to help them shape who they are and their identity, so they're not finding their identity in other things and other places.
That's interesting, bro, that you say that. And I want to ask you a question leading off of that. But it makes me think of my experience as somebody who's not American, right? So obviously I'm from the UK, and I'm very much still attached to my heritage as a Afro-Caribbean, as we would be defined, right? And so, like, I've been to Antigua, I've been to St. Thomas. My uncle was the dean of the university of the, or my great uncle, the dean of the University of Virgin Islands. Like, I'm still attached to that history. It could still go back, trace it back. I mean, there's some fracturedness in terms of different things, you know. And you know how Black people are, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't even know my grandmother's real name till, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was a grown up, and I didn't know that she spoke multiple languages until after she passed. You know what I'm saying? Like, we just be keeping stuff locked down. You know what I'm saying? So that's a whole different thing. But
yeah,
one of the things that I've noticed to what you're saying is, like, there seems to be this unique loss of identity that I see in the African American community in America specifically because of, like, this complete detachment from Africa, but then also being in a land that fundamentally isn't yours.
Yes.
And, like, for whatever reasons we want to attribute, you know, and obviously there's much debate about this, like, but Black people also feel like they don't belong here either. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, that, like, being here, but feeling like you're not wanted here, and then not being connected to the place where you come from and not knowing anything about it, I think creates, like, it compounds that identity crisis that I think most young people are already experiencing anyways, just through the nature of being a young person and trying to figure out like why you're even here and what you're gonna do. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think that's why church history is important to me.
Yes.
Especially for when it comes to identity, it's interesting, right? Because I'm unaware of my own ancestral history. I'm unaware of those things, right? Like a couple of years ago, I just found out that my great-great-grandfather was Native American, you know? And like being detached from all that knowledge about him and what he did and the African woman that he found, right? I don't know anything about that. But also I grew up in a low income area, and growing up in that type of culture, I really wasn't concerned about history. I wasn't concerned about any of those things. But then long comes God, who reveals himself and then gives me an identity and then also gives me church history. And I think church history has to play a part in how we can identify ourselves as believers. Absolutely. I think it plays a very big part in identity. And I think what's interesting about identity is that the lack of identity directly affects meaning. And I think like when you don't know who you are, you don't understand meaning. You understand what I'm saying? Like, I think to a degree you have to know some level of who you are as a person to have some level of drive and ambition and goals. And I think that's why it's crazy to me, man, because Black people in America, I would say, like, we lack that identity thing, but Christ gives us what we lack. That's crazy, right? Like, he gives us, like, even if you're not attached to the historical things of the past and you feel like you don't belong anywhere, Christ gives you that room to belong somewhere. If you don't know who you are, Christ gives you an identity in him that is secure in him. And it will forever be there and no one can take it from you. And it gives you purpose and it gives you meaning. And I find that to be, I don't think no one else can do that on this planet. No one can give you an identity like Christ can give you. Mm-hmm. You know? And I think that has to be a very good message for the young people, man, is that if you do struggle with that, that is something Christ can give you. You know, and maybe it needs to be weeded out some more. But it's for someone who didn't understand who he was, just went with the flow of life, didn't question anything, then got wrecked, and then taught that I can find myself in Christ, that I can actually have a sense of whatever this is, I can know it because of him, and it gives me meaning. And I think that's something that we have to be able to communicate to young people, you know?
Hey, Thomas, so I'm going to take this opportunity to put Chris on blast again for the second podcast in a row. So I've been trying to tell this girl that he needs Thomas. To start talking philosophy and youth ministry on our channel and talking, because he's a like philosophy head, in case you can't tell. And so like, the philosophies, both ancient and modern, and how those are affecting our ideas about like who we are, about theology, all this, and how those things affect ministry or how we engage students. And so I'm trying to get him to do that. He ain't done it yet. So this is the second podcast in a row. I'm letting you and everybody know he needs to start putting videos on the channel because he got stuff to say. So here's my question for you, Thomas. What are the successes that you're having? What are the things that are going well? Like, where are you seeing fruit being born, God moving, lives being changed? Like, where is that happening?
Yeah, I think where, and like I said, one of the things I mentioned as kind of a challenge, but also look at an opportunity, is that although, you know, in my particular church context, you know, we have a lot of high performing kids, they may not necessarily have the time to make it to our programming, but how do I maximize, when I do have the opportunities to engage with them, how do I maximize these one-on-one relationships? So when I catch them before service or after service, like, hey, what's going on with your week? How's school going? You have anything coming up that I can support? You know, popping up at their basketball games, you know, I'm supporting them in that aspect. To me, and for me, that's old school youth ministry. That's how I started out youth ministry, is just really one-on-one relationships. Even right now, we have a large population of college students that are just starting to flood our ministry, and just, you know, stopping some of them, asking them, hey, what's going on? How can I support you? You know, what's happening on campus? Just getting to know what they like, where they're thinking about flowing in the next direction of their life. And the more that you nurture those one-on-one relationships, they see that they're valued and that you care. And for me, that's a success. You know, I could care less about putting a program together and we get 100 kids, because you can get 100 kids to come to your church and nobody comes back. You know, it's just really checking a box. It looked good. People may feel good for the moment, but how do you maximize those personal relationships? One of the things that I'm looking forward to doing in these next couple of weeks and months is allowing some of our young people to get more involved in creating content. I want these young people to tell their stories and start to curate their stories, but also position them to have conversations with members of our church and also in the community, so that we can have conversation across generation. Because what you all just shared just a few moments ago is important to keep that aspect of church history in their faces, but, you know, curating these stories of the church and also through our Black heritage and our ancestry, to be able to not lose what our ancestors fought for through the years in order to have the Black church in the aspect, and understanding how do we keep these stories alive, but also how do we keep these stories alive, but how do we also highlight the history that our young people are now creating, you know, that continues to transform and innovate, you know, what has happened through the years. And so I'm loving the opportunity to give these young people to use what we may call distractions in social media or influences that, you know, may take their attention away. But how can we use those to help build a better story, a larger story, a more effective story, but also using this to reach a more broader audience? Because I think our audience now, when we think about youth ministry, is beyond the church itself inside the four walls. But there are so many people who have phones and tablets and things right in front of their faces. Now, how can we curate these stories? How can we curate teachings of the gospel? And so that persons will have it in the palm of their hands, and they can be like, I connect to that. I resonate with that. And I want to be a part of that.
What is something for the youth pastors out there that are listening? What is some advice that you can give them? And what are ways that you can encourage them, the youth pastors out there that are in the trenches like you and trying to put in that work, man, and tend to the field? How would you, you know, advise them to keep going and encouraging them?
I would encourage them that make sure that you really have a love for this, number one. Youth ministry is not about you and creating a platform for yourself, but looking at this as, how can I create a platform for these kids? It's less about you preaching and less about you being on flyers and more about how do we transform these young people into the leaders of today? Because one of the statements I despise the most is our young people are the future. No, they have the capacity right now. As we've seen over the last few years, these young people can galvanize movements on social media that it takes many of us in our institutions. We got to have a meeting to have a meeting to have a meeting to have a meeting for something that we don't even get planned and executed till 3 or 4 years later. And these young people can, you know, galvanize power in a matter of a social media post and have 1,000 people marching on the steps of an institution in just like that. And, you know, how can we highlight them and give them the opportunities to be great and just allow ourselves just to push them behind the scenes? Also, I think networking is important. You gotta, you know, reach out beyond your community. I've been an advocate of networking since I started youth ministry. I was networking before there was, you know, people were even saying you need to network. I knew I wasn't going to be able to do this by myself. Like, so when I first started getting into this space 20 some years ago, in the church, I'm going to almost everybody's events, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sundays. I'm like, you know, I'm probably about 7 or 8 church events every weekend. And I'm just, you know, sitting back and, you know, watching what works, what doesn't work, what may work in my context, what may not work in my context. Hey, just let me introduce myself. And that can be a challenge because some people, if you show up in their church and you introduce yourself as the youth minister down the street, I had people say, well, you know, at first I didn't even trust you, Brad Kane. I thought you was coming because you wanted a preaching engagement, or I thought you wanted something, or, you know, but really I was just showing up because I'm like, no, I want to learn from you. You know, I want to be able to, you know, be able to go grab food with you and to see, you know, what's your experience in this space? You know, how can I show up and do this work better based on what you've been doing for the last few years? And I think if we just get in a place where we take our guards down and being willing to be in a community of other youth ministers who are like-minded, because everybody's not going to be like-minded, everybody's not going to have your same purpose, and you can't get offended if they don't, because we're all in this for different reasons. But if you find that like-minded community of persons that were willing to share, willing to pour into you, and sometimes it's not even about, you know, ideas for ministry. Sometimes I just need to, man, I got this situation going on and I just need somebody to talk to, bro. I need somebody to pray with. I need somebody who understands what I'm going through, where, you know, I can't get this anywhere else. And I would just sit under some folk just because I needed that, and not just because I was trying to build this great big ministry. It's just because I needed that community of persons around me.
That's good. That's good. Last question for you. What would you say to, because I think this is an important part of the puzzle too, that I think might be the hardest piece to crack in youth ministry, which is parent engagement. What would you say to any parents or volunteers out there that are listening, that are engaging with young people and wanting to do their best to care for them, love them, share Christ with them, steward their futures? What encouragements would you have for them?
Absolutely. I think what I would say to parents and volunteers that the youth pastor is only one person. And to me, in my opinion, I think a successful youth ministry is a reflection of how much the parents are involved. And so there's a responsibility for me as a youth pastor to figure out where are the gifts of my parents, and also having conversations. Not only am I developing relationship with my kids, but I have to develop relationship with my parents. Because they bring different skill sets to the table that may enhance the youth ministry in a way. Or there may be some parents that have an influence or be able to reach some kids that I can't, you know, because, you know, so-and-so is friends with their daughter, or, you know, or this kid is friends with their son. And so there's just so many different aspects. And so a lot of my Sundays after church are not just spent speaking to young people, but I'm talking to parents, you know, I'm starting to hang out with parents as well because, you know, hey, let's go grab some food, you know, and I'm learning from the parents, and then you're able to find ways to incorporate them in the ministry. I had a dad come to me about a year or so ago, and he's like, man, these kids need to learn more about financial literacy. You know, I've been working with my daughter, my oldest daughter, on this. And, you know, me, I think I do pretty well with my finances, but I don't have it down to a pat where I can teach a class. And so, you know, I was like, hey, bro, well, since you're teaching this daughter that your daughter this, can you put together something and we can teach it to the youth ministry? And he was like, oh, yeah, I would love to do that, you know. And so during the pandemic, we did a whole virtual series for 4 weeks. And I mean, we had 30 to 35 kids on Zoom for about 4 weeks learning about financial literacy just because of conversation with this parent and recognizing what he had to offer. And so it's very important, you know, to make those connections and find those spaces where parents can plug in. Now, it might not be working every day or every week with the kids, but there's plenty of places where they can plug in. But also the parents making it an open space where the parent can say, hey, I want to help you out with this. And just being willing and open to figure out how to navigate that.
That's dope.
It takes a village, right?
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. Thomas, appreciate your time, brother. Thank you. Thank you for
anytime, bro.
Being on the podcast, jumping in, sharing your perspective, sharing what's happening in your context. Grateful for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. Well, another episode in the books. RTK Podcast, like we always say, it is the beginning of the conversation, not the end. Questions, comments, concerns. We always want to dialogue. You know where we're at. So, we love you guys, and we will talk to you soon. Peace.